We're taking you behind the scenes with entrepreneurs that run product-based businesses, people that were once in your shoes. Our TSBC alumni, speakers, and friends will shed light on growth strategies, resources, and inspiration to help you scale your creative business. All right, friends, before we get started, I wanted to let you know about a free online workshop that I'm doing on September 20th. I'm going to help you determine whether wholesale is right for you. I know this is a big question mark that a lot of you have, and so I'm going to walk you through 12 questions that I want you to ask yourself before you make that leap into wholesale. If you'd like to join me, head on over to tradeshowcamp.com/wholesale to register for this free online workshop. Hey friends, I'm Katie Hunt, the founder of Trade Show Bootcamp, and welcome to Proof to Product. Today I sat down with Amber Ray, an artist, author, and speaker. Her recent book, Choose Wonder Over Worry, invites you to live your truth, befriend your emotion, and express your gifts. Her writing has reached over 5 million people across 195 countries, and her public art has spread to over 20 countries. She's spoken to and collaborated with brands like Kate Spade, Apple, Amazon, and Unilever, and she's been featured in the New York Times, Time Magazine, Fast Company, BBC, ABC World News, Tim Ferriss's blog, and more. Previously, Amber helped launch 6 best-selling books as the chief evangelist of Seth Godin's publishing experiment. On today's episode, Amber shares strategies for combating worry, fear, and anxiety, and infusing more wonder and creativity into our days. Hey, Amber, thanks so much for joining me today.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
It's my pleasure. So I want to start off with asking you, what is a misconception that people have around the feelings of fear and doubt?
I'd say one of the biggest misconceptions and one of the questions that I get all the time is, how do I make my fear go away? How do I get rid of worry? How do I push away or just get rid of the anxiety? And, you know, it's not about getting rid of it. It's about, how do we cultivate a relationship with it? How do we learn to work with our fear? How do we learn to dance with our anxiety? And so, yeah, the biggest misconception is that these things go away and then we can finally do the thing that we want to do.
It's the avoidance, right?
Yes.
I've totally been, I'm guilty of that. I will confess, I'm guilty of just thinking, oh no, if I just kind of work through this, it'll go away, or ignore it, it will go away, I guess. But tell us about your career path. How did you get to this point in your career where you're an author, an artist, an inspirational speaker?
Yeah, I could have never predicted that 10 years ago, this is what I would be doing today. I actually started my career in the brand marketing world, working with Apple. Then I went into digital agencies, and I was like the creative strategist helping big brands figure out how do they get their products in front of, you know, the right people and building those campaigns. Then I moved into the startup tech world in Silicon Valley and was like rising the ranks there, and really just felt so far from myself, and knew that, like, while I was on this trajectory of success and all of these people thought that on paper, you know, I was off to build something great, I couldn't shake the nagging feeling that I was living someone else's life.
Interesting.
And I couldn't shake the feeling that, you know, as a creative, I didn't know how to build a life or a career on creativity. Like, the best I knew how to do that was like come up with ideas for brands. But I knew that there was like so much more to be discovered. And so first I had a full-blown panic attack and breakdown. and that led to the breakthrough, which of like, I can't keep pretending to be someone that I'm not.
Isn't it funny how sometimes when we're backed up against a wall, that's when the clarity comes? Like, when we're kind of almost at the lowest of lows, it gives us this newfound clarity of where I truly want to go. And maybe it's because we're forced to make a decision at that point because we can't stay at that level.
Yeah. I was like, the pain was so intense that I like the possibility of everything going wrong, what I, you know, the things I wanted to pursue not working out seemed less scary than staying where I was.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that led me to, I ended up quitting my job, selling all my stuff and booking a one-way ticket to New York. Because I felt this like call to move to New York. I didn't know why. I had never even been to New York, but I just like knew I had to be there.
Yeah.
And I had like $1,000 in my bank account. And, you know, most my mentors especially were like, this is very unwise. I can't believe you're doing this. And then I had one friend who said, this just makes a better story. And that really, like, that was an aha for me, because I realized, like, wait, I'm just writing my life story. And like, so what if I get rejected? So what if it doesn't work out? Like, actually, that makes a better story. Mm-hmm. And so when I was able to detach it from like being a reflection of my self-worth, whether or not things go how I wanted, but rather just like a better story, that created so much more like wonder and fun and freedom. So I jetted to New York, and that led to all kinds of creative experiments, working with startups, building community ideas for brands. I was just like trying on anything, bringing people together late at night. And that eventually led me to work with Seth Godin to start a publishing company.
That's incredible. I know when I saw that you worked with Seth, how was that experience? How did that experience working with him help you to shape the topics that you now speak and write about?
I'd say that was the most pivotal, one of the most pivotal experiences of my life, both because I was like paralyzed with fear at so many moments and just like crippling and like, you know, like I so badly wanted Seth to like and approve of me and, you know, to like know that I was doing great work and like mm-hmm. that got in the way. But also like it pushed me so far outside my comfort zone, and he really created a safe space because like the whole team was freaking out half the time.
Right. You know?
And so like while we were trying something new, you know, building this new kind of publishing model, we got prepared 12 books in 6 months, which was insane. Going wow. from like idea to manuscript in 12 weeks.
That's insane.
Yeah. And so it just shifted what I thought was possible, what I knew I was capable of, and had me face all of these anxieties and fears and insecurities in this like pressure cooker environment.
Yeah.
And so
I feel like that situation would either make or break people. Do you agree?
Well, I feel like we all were made it. I felt like I had a breakdown. I had two breakdowns. Everyone cried. So I mean, like we all had our moments of like, oh my God, I can't do this. But then realizing, wait, actually, yeah, you can.
Yeah. And realizing how much strength you did have.
And okay. Seth was really like, and he really, you know, he, as terrifying as it was sometimes working for him, he was so generous, so kind. He really rooted for us. He wasn't going to like hand us approval, but he was going to like push us way past what we thought we could do and show us that we were capable of much more.
That's awesome.
So I feel like that shaped my like risk-taking tolerance, like courage, and even just everything that he talked about, the lizard brain and resistance. Mm-hmm. And we work with Stephen Pressfield, who wrote the book, The War of Art, and we did his second book, Do the Work. And so just like seeing their messaging and their perspective, I think really shaped what my own curiosities were. It was like a mirror for me to see what I was so deeply curious about.
That's amazing. So you have a new book out that's called Choose Wonder Over Worry. I really enjoyed it. What motivated you to write this book?
Well, you know, there's this notion that our mess is our message. And I really feel like my mess was all of these worry stories, these fears of rejection, feeling like an imposter, not being good enough, just I had all these limiting stories inside of my head about who I thought I was and what I thought I was capable of that really paralyzed me creatively and paralyzed, you know, what I decided to go after, whether or not I spoke up, whether or not I like said hi to the cute guy, you know, like in all domains of life. I was right. Like, why am I holding back and playing small? I'm sick of this shit. And so that really, you know, I think it was my own struggle there. And I feel like the Seth experience was like what really catalyzed me and helped me break through that glass ceiling. And that was really the inspiration, and realizing that I wasn't alone in that, which I thought I was alone for so long. Like, I'm the only one who like thinks I'm not worthy or enough. No, like actually most people struggle with that. That's actually what unites us as humans.
Right. Well, it's interesting. When you said the word imposter syndrome, I remember being on stage at the Sean West conference and speaking, and somebody asked me, imposter syndrome was something we were talking about at the time. And somebody asked me, you're here speaking from this audience, you have a community, do you ever feel imposter syndrome? And I said yes, every darn day. Like, don't we every damn day feel like imposters in some way or another? And I think I surprised people with my answer, but at the same time, I think that's because we're human. I think we're constantly trying to think of how can we do things better? How can we improve? But I don't know. What do you tell people? You know, I work mostly with creative artists and entrepreneurs, and they do suffer from imposter syndrome. So how do you encourage them to handle that and work through it and make it into a positive thing?
I think first off, if imposter syndrome is coming up for you, that means you're outside your comfort zone and growing. And so just knowing that, like, oh, of course you're wondering, do I deserve to be here? Because you're challenging yourself. And so you're on a path to growth. So first off, just know, oh, I'm growing. And two, know that, like, it's literally, we're triggering the part of our brain that we have evolved as a species over, you know, millions of years to have this part of our brain, the amygdala, which, like, goes into fight, flight, or freeze mode anytime we're doing something new and uncomfortable that is challenging us. So knowing that, like, it's just our brain has been wired to freak out and think, do I deserve to be here? Am I good enough? Because we just want to feel a sense of, like, belonging and connection. Yep. And so recognizing that, like, oh, my brain is actually kind of tricking me right now. And I'm just, like, growing and outside my comfort zone. That is what really helps me. And knowing that, no, we're totally not alone in that.
Yeah.
And then in that, like, I was actually sitting down with a woman 2 days ago who is brilliant. She's doing a ton of research around this new field. And she's like, but I'm not a scientist and I'm not a professional researcher. So who am I to, like, write a book or speak about this? And I said to her, the fact that you're not a researcher or a scientist is actually a unique advantage, because you are a human that, like, started discovering these insights. And then you, like, turn to the researchers and the scientists, and now you're able to tell a story that people can relate to. And yeah. So I think in the sense of, like, imposter syndrome, what is actually your unique advantage there? Or, like, I know so many artists that I've worked with, and myself too, like, you know, who am I to make art? I didn't go to art school. And yep. Like, how that, like, lack of formal education can seem like I don't deserve this or I'm an imposter, when actually that can have you, you know, go outside the lines, try things new, see new connections. That can actually be your advantage as an artist.
I love that. Yeah, because you're bringing a fresh perspective and a different viewpoint to it. That's totally awesome. In your book, you caution that not all worry is bad and that there's really two types of worries. Can you describe what those are for us?
Absolutely. So there's toxic worry and there's useful worry. And, you know, worry, again, is a part of our brain, worry, fear, and worry is here to protect us and keep us safe. If we're too close to the edge of a mountain, worry is going to be like, yo, back up. You can fall off the mountain. Or if we're, like, swiping right on Tinder and some guy's like, hey, baby, come over right now. Worry might be like, don't go to his house.
Right.
And so, like, worry, you know, serves a use. Or let's say we have, like, a really important deadline next week and we haven't started anything around that. Worry is going to chime in to say, this is important. I need you to show up. Yeah. So again, worry protects us, keeps us safe, keeps us accountable. But where it becomes toxic worry is when it's those obsessive looping thoughts where we ruminate and stay stuck on these thoughts that really hold us back and paralyze us.
Yeah. Huh. That's so fascinating to me. I really liked how your book infused how the worry flows with the wonder too. So how, like, describe wonder to us and how they're kind of counterparts.
Yeah. So I think of worry as our inner critic, or it's the voice inside our head that says those, am I good enough? Who am I to do this? What will they think of me? What if it fails?
Yeah.
You know, oh, this happened bad before. What if it happens again? You know, it's again, that ruminating thought, whereas wonder is our curious inner guide. So wonder both questions worry to sort of, like, truth check it. Like, let's say worry's like, you know, who are you to do that? Wonder might say, well, why not you? Or, like, why not try something new? Why not push the box? Why not stand up and speak up? Your voice matters. So it's like questioning worry and then pushing us and nudging us in the direction of what feels right and true for us.
So how do we infuse more of that wonder into our life and into our work and into our creative endeavors? Because it's hard. Like, it's, I don't know. I feel like I have small children and I look at my kids and they are brave and they are fearless and they, like, don't care what people think. And they, you know, and I want more of that, but I feel like as we get older, it becomes harder to inject that wonder into our life. So what do you recommend there?
So much of my process is before we can, like, step into really embodying and embrace wonder, it's about really, like, checking worry. And so a lot of my work is around how do we actually name, talk to, and dialogue with our different worry voices. So, like, my inner perfectionist, I named her Grace, and she's a 30-something British woman who hails from London, and she wants everything in a very neat and tidy box. And because I've named Grace, anytime I'm, like, writing an article and all of a sudden I have the voice inside my head saying, this is terrible, this sucks, everyone's going to hate it, I can pause and say, hey, Grace, like, I see you hanging out here. What's going on?
Right.
Grace will be like, well, I just want a really high quality piece of work and this isn't very good, so I'm disappointed. And I'll be like, Grace, I get that. I understand. We have the same goal, which is quality. Here's the thing. You're stifling my artist right now. And I need space to get messy, to write something really bad before I can get to something good. Yeah. And so much of it is like learning to actually name, because when we name it, we tame it. Name when that worry's showing up so that we can put it in its place, set a boundary, and really create space for our creative or our artist to step up and thrive.
So interesting. So your book also included a statistic about regret and anxiety that kind of threw me for a loop, if I'm being 100% honest. But it says research shows that we spend 80% of our time with regret about past or anxiety about the future. Yep. That number seems like shockingly high.
Yeah.
What kind of effect is this constant worry and fear having on us as individuals and human beings?
I mean, to be honest, why did I write this book? When I heard that stat, it was like my heart broke. I was like, what do you mean we're spending 80% of our time with regret about the past or anxiety about the future? We're spending 80% of our time worrying about things that rarely ever happen. And, you know, and there's that quote, I can't remember who said it, but worry is a misuse of our imagination. Oh. And if we take our imagination into worry, we can also take it into wonder. We can, you know, and it can be useful again to worry and think about what the worst case scenario is so we can plan for it, but wonder about what we want to create, you know, how this might look, what all the possibilities are is just as useful. And so, you know, the way that worry impacts us, I mean, it's everything from like disease in our body to it impacts how we eat, the way we eat, what we choose to eat. It impacts, you know, whether or not we take a risk or go after something. It stifles literally, it can, every aspect of our lives.
Can you tell us about a success story of somebody you've worked with that was really, truly struggling with these fears and regret, anxiety, worry, and how they, I mean, you mentioned name it and tame it, but like how past that, like how are we truly working through this to create a positive environment for ourselves and our feelings, like addressing our feelings, I guess.
Yeah. So I'll go into more theory and then I can give it an example, but I think two things that are really powerful is to make friends with our feelings, to make friends with our worry. And rather than seeing it as this enemy, again, remembering that it's here trying to keep us safe and protect us. Mm-hmm. Because so often when we think it's the enemy, we want to push it away, that actually causes us more pain. So just acknowledging that, like when worry comes up, anxiety comes up, fear comes up, oh, this is visiting me and it's trying to protect me. There's actually this Greek religion that I learned about recently called Hellenism. And the ancient Greeks believed that emotions would come visit you. And like including creativity. Creativity was like a muse that would come to visit. And I think Elizabeth Gilbert talked about this in a TED talk. But like fear would come to visit. And then our job was to just like feel it, observe it, and let it go and not become it.
Right.
So like, oh, anxiety is visiting me today. I wonder what anxiety wants me to know. And then like, okay, thank you, anxiety, for your insight or your message. You may go now. Or like, anger is visiting me today. Why is anger visiting me? I'm so pissed off. I wonder, I should get curious about what anger wants me to know. Thank you, anger, for the message.
Yeah.
And we can learn to actually like get curious, make friends with it. Just like if like your child is like crying and angry, you're not going to be like, you're awful, go away. You're going to be like, what's going on?
Right.
Why are you upset? And so like, how do we learn to cultivate that relationship with ourselves? We make friends with our feelings. We really make friends with ourselves.
Yeah. This reminds me of, so not to keep bringing my kids up in this, but like their school has done a big push for social emotional learning at the school and like recognizing how when they are feeling these feelings, how do, you know, giving them the space to feel the way they feel, not to squash it, similar to what you're saying there. But we didn't, you know, I didn't grow up with that. We didn't grow up with that. So now I feel like it's good for me to learn these lessons through my children, through reading your book, and through just being more observant about my own feelings and my own stresses and my own triggers for what causes me that anxiety or, you know, fear. So anyhow, just.
No, and it makes me, my like life's work, I feel like, is to like fix the problems our society never, because I didn't learn how to feel my feelings. I didn't like, it was like, don't be sad. Like girls don't get angry. You know, it's like we were not, or men, you know, boys don't cry. Like men have to be strong. You know, there
are. Or it was just even anyone that was upset was always angry. And it's like, well, no, they could be frustrated. They could be sad. They could, you know, there's all these different feelings. So anyhow, carry on. I didn't mean to interrupt you with that.
No. But I like, you know, that is very widespread across our society for people in our age and like and older, but for kids now, I'm so, so happy to hear that they're starting to incorporate more of that emotional and social programming, because it's so, 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 so key. I literally think that the world will change when we can have a healthy relationship with our feelings and ourselves.
Yeah.
So, but then I'd say, you know, the second, I think, tool that is so useful is to learn to question our feelings. It's like, yes, feel them, but then question them. Be like, you know, let's say that anxiety is coming up, you know, where, or it's like a story of, you can't do that. You're not capable of that. It's asking like, well, where did this come from?
Right.
And, you know, where did I get this idea that I'm not capable and I can't do this? And in addition to that, like, when's a time that I actually was capable when I was facing something new and trying something the first time? And when did I persevere and did it work out? Yeah. So it's learning to like provide evidence to prove our belief to be not true.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. I'm just taking it all in. I'm like absorbing this as we go. Cause I, in one sense, and I'm getting a little off topic here, but like in one sense, I feel like emotions are so high right now, just in the world we're living in. And I feel like there's so many feelings happening, but yet to your point, I don't know that we are like addressing what am I truly feeling right now? And then how do I handle that? Or how do I manage it?
And I would argue that feelings are so high and there's so many emotions because we never learned how to navigate them.
Yeah.
So it's like, I mean, even like, how do we deal with anger and outrage, and how do we express that in a way that can be heard? And how do we, you know, do we use our partner as a punching bag when we're pissed off, or do we understand where a boundary has been crossed and what we're going to do about it?
Yeah.
And so it's like, we haven't been taught like what message our emotion is wanting to give to us. And so often we then express it externally as someone else's fault. It's so easy to blame someone else than to take responsibility for our own lack or void or whatever it is.
How can we infuse more of the positive feelings and more of the creativity in our day to day, whether it's work or personal life?
Yeah. I mean, that's a question I love to ask. I feel like there's no right answer to that, but I love the question of like, how do I infuse more creativity into my day? Cause I think how you answer that is gonna be different from how I answer that.
Totally. Totally.
And so that's something that I love. Like, what does wonder look and feel like to you? And how can you weave more wonder? Cause I think creativity is born from wonder. Mm-hmm. And so like for me, I have a clue journal. And so I have this like small notebook. I actually have it with me. I have this small notebook that I always carry with me. And anytime something like grabs me or inspires me, or I hear something that resonates, I write it down. And it's just a way of tracking clues and curiosities. And what I've noticed is that it primes my brain to be in a state of presence and in a state of noticing, because I'm looking for inspiration.
I like that. I like the presence component of it. But you're right. Everyone gets motivated and inspired by different things. Some people need to be physical, get out and walk around the block, or go see something at a museum or whatever it might be. The infusing play and white space in our day, I think, also helps with addressing the feelings and also inspiring that creativity and the wonder.
Totally. And I'd say the two biggest things that have made the biggest difference for me that I think are pretty universal is I don't sleep with my phone next to me anymore. I literally plug it in the other room, like where it would take me, you know, like as far away from my bed as possible.
Yes.
I have an alarm clock for when I need to. And when I wake up, my journal is next to me and like my morning rituals are set out. So I wake up and I'm not allowed to touch my phone until I've like written for, you know, it can be sometimes 15 minutes.
Oh, wow.
Like, what is that thing that I know that I do it as soon as I wake up, I'm going to feel so good and feel so grounded going into the day. And that like, that's changed everything. I feel like not grabbing my phone and like all of a sudden taking in the inputs of everyone else.
Right.
Really starting with like presence and a moment to connect with myself.
It's interesting. I think that that's a great ritual for the morning to start afresh. But I also think you're right on the back end of going to bed at night. You know, we don't need to be laying in bed scrolling Insta stories and things like that. You know, like we need to turn it off and let our mind wander a bit and just see, you know, think about the day and think about what we want to be doing differently. So,
or even like reflect, like I love to at night be like, okay, what were the three memorable things from today?
Yes.
Like what was hard and what did I learn? Like, you know, just creating a little bit of space to reflect on what happened.
I love that. I absolutely love that. All right. Well, what advice would you give to product-based business owners who, you know, have anxiety, worry, and fear in their personal lives and their work? I know you talked about some strategies already, but just how do we not let that impact our businesses or our day-to-day lives?
I think we just face it and name it head on. So like, I have a small team, and one of my core values is that you share your feelings as they arise. So it's like just being able to name and have that sort of culture of like, hey, I wanted to be honest, and I'm feeling a lot of anxiety about this right now. Because what happens when we give voice to what we're feeling, it actually, neuroscience shows that we reduce our anxiety immediately around the sensation by up to 50%.
Wow. So
yeah, that much. So it's like, if it's stuck inside of us and we're feeling anxious and we're trying to just like keep going and just like go deeper into work and not address it, it'll only amplify. But if we're able to like say, and this could be like to a friend, or if we're able to say to a colleague, like, hey, can I be really honest with you? I'm feeling a little stressed out about this deadline. And, you know, and then having that conversation and talking about it, 5 minutes of talking about it and addressing it can make a world of difference.
Is that true for both men and women? That 50% decrease?
That was men and women. I learned that through a neuroscientist, up to 50%.
Okay. That's just so interesting because I'm a talker. My husband is not so much of a talker. I mean, when I process, I like to process through speaking about things. Mm. He's not as much. So I was just curious if there was a gender difference too with some of that.
And naming it can be to another human. Naming it could be to a journal. Naming it could be to yourself. So it's just the act of like, oh, right now I'm noticing that my heart is beating fast. I'm feeling a little bit of anxiety. I have these thoughts, and just like presencing yourself to the moment and what your experience is. Yeah. And that could be, again, like some people process better through talking with other people. Some actually would rather pull out their journal and have a conversation with themselves.
Yeah, that makes sense too. So what's next for you? I mean, you've written this book now. What are your plans for the future?
I really want to take the message as far and wide as possible. And that's actually like, that's the question that I'm sitting with right now, which is like, what's next? And also what's now? Mm-hmm. I feel like it's, you know, I'm such a what's next kind of person, but I was like, wait, what's now? What is everything that we've cultivated and how can I take this further?
And I was going to say too, the now of you've written this book, you need to relish in it for a little bit and talk about it and, you know, celebrate the success of it too.
Totally, totally. I literally like, I'm wrapping up a 2-week staycation in New York where I just like, I read so many novels, you know, got massages, like, cause we did a 7-city tour and I did probably 125 interviews, 15 events. Like it was nonstop. And it was like, I loved it. But it also, you know, it takes a toll on your body.
Oh,
and
yeah.
So I've been celebrating and savoring it all. And then before I move into phase 2 of taking the message further.
Awesome. Well, where can people find you online and where can they find your book? We'll definitely include your links too in the show notes, but why don't you tell them?
Yeah. So choosewonder.com is where you can find the book. And then my favorite medium is Instagram. And so I share a lot of art and writing all around these topics. And I'm Hey Amber Ray, Ray spelled R-A-E.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for your time today. This was a lot of fun. From a personal standpoint, I enjoyed just hearing you talk about this stuff because, you know, we go through different seasons in life where sometimes we let worry creep in a little bit more than others. And so it's natural in business and in our lives to have different seasons where we need to worry, where we need to squash the worry and just make sure we're putting more time and effort into the wonder and the
love. Absolutely.
So yeah. Thank you so much for your time.
Yes, of course. Thanks for having me.
Okay, friends, many of you are in the process of contemplating whether wholesale is the right next step for your business. And guys, I get it. I know that it feels like a big, scary decision, and there are lots of things that you're probably considering. And that's why I'm offering a free online workshop to help you determine, is wholesale right for me? I'll walk you through 12 questions that I want you to ask yourself before you make that leap into wholesale. And I'll also explain why each of those questions is super important. The free workshop will take place on Thursday, September 20th at noon Pacific, and space will be limited. To grab your seat, head to tradeshowcamp.com/wholesale to register. And also, so you know, a replay will be available to everyone that registers ahead of time. So again, register at tradeshowcamp.com/wholesale. Proof to Product is brought to you by Trade Show Bootcamp and hosted by me, Katie Hunt. Since 2011, TSBC has worked with hundreds of product-based businesses to help them uplevel, scale, and build profitable, sustainable companies. You can find our show notes and additional resources at prooftoproduct.com. And if you like what you heard today, please head over to Apple Podcasts to leave a 5-star review and subscribe. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back next week with a new episode.